Father's Day. You know, we begin a new series today that we're calling Family Man. It's going to be a three-part series as we look at this whole business of dads and the culture and society and everything else that's going on. We're living through a crisis right now in our culture. And the crisis is this. More children are growing up in America today without a dad that they know and interact with than with a dad. And because of that, we're seeing horrible things happen with the upcoming generation. Girls without fathers in their lives are 2.5 times more likely to get pregnant out of wedlock, 53% more likely to commit suicide. Boys without a father involvement are twice as likely to drop out of school, twice as likely to go to jail, and four times more likely to need help for emotional and behavioral problems. In other words, our children are growing up feeling directionless. One of the things that we have to learn, and I don't think our society gets this, is that things are caught more than they're taught. You catch it more than you learn it. And that's why children who've never been very good at listening to their parents yet never fail to imitate them, because they're going to copy whatever the parents are doing. It's just a way of life. It's what happens. Children imitate their parents, especially their fathers. They are a gift from God, but it is the dad's responsibility to instill certain things in his children. And because dads are absent today, those things are not getting instilled. The Bible tells us something interesting in Proverbs chapter 20 and in verse 7. It says, the righteous who walks in his integrity, blessed are his children after them. Everybody I know wants to have a dad that they can be proud of. Wants a dad that they can celebrate, that they can be thankful for. And the scripture tells us when that dad walks in integrity, his children after him are blessed because they get to follow in what he does. And they will catch his integrity. Reading something the other day, it's a true story about a family lived on a farm. They had a dog, and the dog was expecting some puppies. And so somehow the dog got in the high grass, and the fellow was on his big tractor, ran over the dog's back legs, cut him off. Rushed the dog to the vet. Vet said he could save the dog. The puppies were fine. So they sewed up the dog's back legs. Brought the dog home. The dog's still pregnant, but she taught herself to walk. She'd take two steps on her front legs and then move her bottom. Two steps on her front legs, move her bottom. Well, sure enough, a couple of weeks went by. She delivered six healthy puppies. She nursed them. She weaned them. She did everything you could imagine and was a great mama to those puppies. Well, guess what? The puppies learned how to walk. And guess how they walked? Even though they had four good legs, two steps forward, move your bottom. Two steps forward, move your bottom. So they had seven dogs running around the farm that were walking like that. And the reason is young ones imitate their parents. That's what they do. That's how they learn. Things are caught more than they're taught. And so, Dad, to help your children be their best, we want to talk this morning about the five actions that you must take to ensure that your children are catching what they need to be their best. What do your children need to catch? And what do they need to catch from you in order to be their best? First one, number one, most important thing I can even say to you is spend time with your children. Spend time with your children. Reading the other day about a dad who came home from work. He was just overwhelmed. He was stressed. He had so much going on. And so he comes in. The family gets done eating supper. They clear the table. Well, he sits down, immediately spreads his work out and starts working. And his son comes walking in and says, hey, Dad, come on, let's go play. And his dad looked at him and says, son, I want to. I can't. I need to do some stuff. I didn't get all my work done at work, so I had to bring it home. Well, his son left the room, and you could tell it was kind of something he was thinking about. So he came walking back in, and he walked over and he patted his daddy on the back, and he said, Daddy, that's okay. Maybe they could put you in a slower group at work. The Bible tells us in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15, it says, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. I don't know of a verse anywhere that applies to our day as good as that verse. And I don't know one anywhere, dads, that should impact your life like that verse should. Look carefully how you walk. Look carefully how you conduct your life and what you do. And how do you make the most of all the time? Make the best use of your time with your kids by letting them have priority in your time. Let me give you a basic principle. If you can't teach your kids anything else, you teach them this. This is the most important thing you can teach them, bar none. It's this. When your values are clear, your decisions are easy. Teach your children the appropriate biblical values now by spending time with them. Then decisions that they have to make later will be easier to make. And let me ask you, Dad, where does your family fit in your schedule? Well, I mean, you know, I try to make them number one, or maybe then number two, or, well, I don't know. Let me tell you something. Does your time really go to your kids? Your kids are not a priority if you don't spend time with them. And just because you say I put a roof over their heads and I put food in their bellies and I give them a table to sit under, that's not enough. They need you. They need your time. They need you to spend time with them. Dr. James Dobson, in his book, Bringing Up Boys, which I read, and reread when we were raising our sons, because one of them in particular was a challenge to raise. But anyway, Bringing Up Boys says this, quote, this disengagement of parents in our fast-paced, dizzying world will show up repeatedly in our discussion of boys. It is the underlying problem plaguing children today. I think it's fair to say we live in a fast-paced, dizzying world because we move so fast. And when I get moving so fast, I can soon find myself dishonoring those that are closest to me. It's so easy to push your children away and not even realize that you're doing it. That's why in Ephesians 6:4, the Bible says that fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. It's so easy to treat your children as if they're just an addendum to your life or something that is a distraction to you. And it's saying, don't do that to your kids. Don't provoke your kids that way. Spend time with your children. Show them that they're important to you. Show them that they matter to you. I love the way the Message paraphrases this. It says, take your children by the hand and lead them in the way of the master. And there are times when I took my kids by the hand and I dragged them. They were dragged to church, you know. My youngest son, you say he had a drug problem. He was drugged everywhere he went, especially to church. But you know what? It's okay. It didn't hurt him. And yeah, I'm not called to be my children's best friend. You know, parents need to get over that today. Trying to think that they're supposed to be their child's buddy. You're not supposed to be your child's buddy. You're supposed to be their parent. You're supposed to teach them what is right from what is wrong by your example. Don Elliott, in his book, Raising the Son, wrote these words, with troubled boys, the common theme is distant, uninvolved fathers, and in turn, mothers who have taken on more responsibility to fill that gap. You know, when my boys were growing up, we always had a basketball goal in the driveway, made sure we had one, and we shot goals just about every day, didn't we, Janice? And that's how we hung out. And we used that as teachable moments, as time when we could talk, when we could spend time together. And I can remember when I'd come in from the church and I'd say, hey, boys, y'all want to go shoot some hoops? Never once did they say no. But there were times when they came to me and they'd say, hey, Dad, can you go shoot hoops? And I'd say, well, man, I just can't right now. I got to do this. Why is it that they never said no? Because spending time with me was a priority to them. They wanted to spend that time. Your child needs your time to be their best. Make sure you spend time with your children, Dad. Number two, the second thing I want you to notice here is teach your children. Teach your children. Now, we like to push this off on mothers, but let me tell you something, Dad. You are the one that is responsible for helping your child catch those things that they need to catch in life in order to be successful, to teach them lessons about life and giving. That's how you set boundaries for your children, and they need boundaries. To teach your children. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 6 says this, "And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise." In other words, what it's saying to you as the father, as the spiritual leader of your home, you have enough of God's word on your heart. You have enough of it encased in your heart that every time you are interacting with your children, it is a teachable moment because you're teaching them what's important and what matters and how they need to shape their lives. How important it is. You grab those teachable moments with your kids because it's going to happen spontaneously. You can't say, okay, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, I'm going to sit down with my children and we're going to have a teachable moment. No, you're not. You're going to have to react. Listen to me, Dad. To set the appropriate boundaries for your children, you must teach them about four things. Dad, these are the fences that you need to build for your kids. These are the boundaries that you need to set. Number one, the first one, make sure you teach them about commitment. Teach them about commitment. The Bible tells us in Ephesians 6:1, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." Let me tell you, children are commanded in the Bible to respect the authority of their parents. And Dad, you are the authority in the home, and you better be teaching your children how to respect authority. Now, I'm not talking about lording it over them, and I'm not talking about being mean about it, but I am talking about being authoritative enough that they understand and respect your authority because you're operating as the spiritual leader. You're giving them reliable guidance. Dad, you're supposed to teach your children how to respect authority, how to respect the authority of a school teacher, how to respect the authority of a police officer, how to respect the authority of a fireman, how to respect the authority of a pastor, how to respect the authority of people in our culture. And you don't do that by lording over them with a strong arm or a loud voice. You don't assume control of your home by force. You do it because you submit yourself to the authority of God. And when they see you submitted to the authority of God and you building your life on the principles of His Word, then you get to teach them how to do the same. Anybody here involved in public education right now? All right, thank you. I see your hand. Let me ask you a question. Here's what I've heard. I hear this from my own family who's heavily involved in public education. One of the biggest problems that teachers face today are parents. Would you agree with that? It's parents. You know why? Because their darlings don't do anything wrong. And how dare you challenge their darling? Let me tell you the rule in our house. My boys got in trouble with the teacher, they were in trouble with me. Because authority was more important than anything else. Now that teacher may be wrong, and we may talk about it. But we're still going to respect her authority. Or his authority. Because we talked about this in the Ten Commandments, folks. When a society no longer operates by the glue of honor in that society, because authority is not honored, then everything falls apart. Let me tell you something, Dad. The greatest privilege you have is to build into your life the truths of God and then to teach that level of commitment, that level of honor, that level of submission to God's authority to your children. But they got to see it in you. If they don't see you submitting to God's authority, they're not going to feel any need to do it. So number one, teach them commitment. Number two, this is a big one, companions. Companions. The scripture says in 1 Corinthians 15:33 that do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Now listen, let me tell you something. Here's what your kid's going to tell you. You don't have a right to select my friends. Yes, you do. You not only have a right, you have a responsibility. It is your responsibility to know who your child's friends are and to know what they are involved in. It is your responsibility as a parent, as a father, to sit down and talk. I sat down and had a conversation with every boy that came into our house that was befriending our sons. I wanted to know his background. I wanted to know who his family was. I wanted to know how he thought, and I wanted to know what he thought was right and what he thought was wrong, because I wanted to know what kind of influence he's going to be on our son. And I'm going to tell you, if I didn't like it, I had a daddy way of ending that relationship. You know, you got to be involved. And you got to be involved with your children's friends. It's a very important boundary. You know, if we could get our children to the point that they could see through a new set of glasses and be able to pick out which friends would have positive peer pressure on them, we'd be far ahead of the game. But guess what? They're not going to do that. That's your job. That's your job. Third thing you got to teach them. If you're going to have the proper boundaries, not only commitment and about companions, but also, and this is a biggie, self-control. You also have to teach them self-control. I was reading recently a study that was done. They did this study back about 15 or 20 years ago, and they actually followed the kids that were involved in the study. And the way it worked was this way. They had four-year-olds. They were all sitting around a table. And a fellow walked in and had a bag of big marshmallows, you know, the big, fluffy kind of marshmallows. And he put a marshmallow in front of each one of the children. And here's what he told them. He said, "Now listen, when I leave the room, you can eat your marshmallow if you want to. But if you wait until I come back, then you not only get that marshmallow, I will give you another marshmallow if you don't eat that one until I come back." And so then he just left the room. And so all the kids understood. He made sure that they understood. Well, as soon as the door shut, when he walked out of the room, half the group popped the marshmallow in their mouth, fully probably expecting that when he came back, if they pitched a fit enough, they'd get a marshmallow anyway. The other half sat there and left the marshmallow right on the table in front of them. Well, he came back into the room about 7 minutes later. He saw those who had a marshmallow and those who didn't. He walked over to those who had a marshmallow and he put another one in front of them, just like he said he was. And then he said, "Okay, you can eat both marshmallows." The other kids started pitching a fit. He said, "No, I told you what the rules were. It's the way it was." Now let me tell you what they did. They then followed those kids for the next 15 years to see what those kids' lives were like. As they followed them all the way through adolescence, here was their conclusion. When the two marshmallow children were evaluated during their adolescence, they were measured against the one marshmallow peers, and the two marshmallow kids were found to be more confident, more competent, more assertive, more reliable, and less likely when faced with difficulties to quit. Not to mention more eager to learn, better able to concentrate, and scored significantly higher on the SAT tests than the one marshmallow kids. And in addition, they continue to be far better at self-control. You know, it's amazing. We expect our children to not live for immediate gratification, and then we turn around and do it. When in essence, we should be teaching our children that delayed gratification is one of the best things that they can do. Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 28 says that a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. In other words, self-control is vital. If you can't practice self-control, then you're going to lose all of your boundaries, because without self-control, you won't make it in life. And to reinforce that in your children, dads, you have to practice delayed gratification yourself. Because remember, please hear me, things are caught more than they're taught. They're going to copy you. Children, let me tell you something. If you've got a flaw in your character, Dad, your children are not going to imitate that flaw. They're going to magnify it. They're going to do more of that flaw than you do. And that's why it is important that you make sure you give attention to yourself. I think One of the saddest things I know in this world is a child who has to apologize for his father because of a father who lacks self-control. There are children who grow into adulthood with deep emotional scars because of a father who lacks self-control. All right, number four, the fourth thing that we have to do if we're going to help our children have the appropriate boundaries and teach them what we need to teach them is not only teach them about commitment, not only teach them about companions and about self-control, but also about challenges. About challenges. You know, I think one of the greatest ways that you can teach children lessons about life is finding a way to get them into the outdoors. That's why, you know, I always took up mine hunting. Hunting was a big part of what we did as a family. I tell you, another great way to do it is camping. Because all the time there are going to be challenges that you're going to have to face. Get your family into the outdoors and take them camping. Get them involved in some way because they are going to have to face challenges. I mean, you're going to plan for good weather and you get there and you have the wrong clothes and your tent leaks. You didn't bring enough food. You burned the food. You lost the food. A bear ate the food. A bear ate your tent. I mean, you know, there are all kind of things that happened. You get a flat tire, a hand gets smashed, you fall down and slide into the lake, you get drenched. All of these kind of difficult circumstances arise and you just handle them as a family. And what you teach your children too then is that when you face difficulties, you can grow stronger from it. That challenges are good things because they bring the best out of us. You know, we used to, when my boys were small, my first church out of seminary was in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. It was in a little town of Maryville, Tennessee. And once a week, we would ride into Cades Cove. And if you've never been there, you need to go there. It's a beautiful place. And there was a dirt road that is a back entrance to Cades Cove that we know about. And so we'd slip our way into that dirt road. And then there was a high country meadow up there that we'd make our way up to. And Janice would have made us a good picnic lunch, and we spread all the, you know, spread out on the quilt on the ground, and we would just play and have fun and face challenge. I can't tell you how many times we would venture out from there on a walk and we'd run into a bear. And, you know, trying to slow Jeff, our youngest son, down from going up and hugging the bear was a big challenge. But, you know, I'd basically clamp down on him and hold down tight. We just had so many great, great experiences. I remember on one occasion we were in the Cades Cove picnic ground, and there was a bear that came into the picnic ground, and he was just going crazy. I mean, he was tearing up all kind of stuff. And so we got in the car, and guess what rolls up? This Range Rover comes rolling up, and it says Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom on the side. And all you old folks, you remember that program used to come on TV. Well, guess who gets out? Jim Fowler. Jim Fowler gets out, and he's with the Rangers, and they're going to go over, and they're going to dart this bear. And so then they dart the bear. Of course, my boys are saying, "Let's go, Dad, let's go." And of course, Dad is saying, "Let's go, let's go." And Janice is saying, "I'm staying here, I'm staying here." So we jumped out of the car, man. We're chasing that bear through the woods with Jim Fowler of Mutual and Omaha's Wild Kingdom. And the bear passes out, and we're helping, and we're doing all this stuff. Come to find out, the bear had an abscessed tooth. People been feeding the sweets and it got a cavity. So they pulled the tooth and they treated it. And boy, I mean, we're heroes. I mean, we are heroes. Boys and I come walking back to the car. They're getting ready to take that bear off the high country and replace it. And I mean, our chests were sticking out so far we were splitting our T-shirts. I mean, it was amazing. But you know, those are the kind of adventures that families need. Spend that kind of time together. James chapter 1 verse 2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds." And that word various, by the way, means multicolored. When you face all these multicolored trials. "For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." How do you get to that point that you can handle what life brings? You learn how to face it when you're a kid. And dad, teach your kids how to face challenging situations. Don't do everything for them. Don't tell yourself it's easier for you to do it, and so you go ahead and do it. Let them fumble at it. Let them make a mess when they carry the trash out, and then let them clean up the mess. But teach them what it means to face challenges, because that's how you learn patience, and that's how you keep the boundaries in your life. Dad, do you realize that God may allow you to face certain challenges in your life so that your children will know how to face challenges in their lives? So tell them why you're walking through it. Tell them why you're facing this health crisis. Tell them why you're facing this challenge in your life. And let them see you leaning on God. Facing a challenge is caught as much as it's taught. There's spontaneous things that we must be ready, dads, to teach our children. Without them, they have no boundaries. And remember, when values are clear, decisions are easy. We're going to learn how to spend time with our children. Third thing I want you to notice. This is important. Have fun with your children. Have fun with your children. Ecclesiastes chapter 8 verse 15 says that I commend joy. For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat, drink, be joyful. This will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun. Play with your kids. Laugh with your kids. Have fun with your kids. Let your kids see you not as some stick in the mud. Build forts. Enjoy sports. Take vacations. Eat pizza. Burp and scratch. Do whatever you got to do, but just have fun with them. You know, when our boys were small, we always did stuff together. And so when they were a little bit smaller, I got us a trampoline. And every Tuesday night was my night with the boys. Janice would go do women's ministry at the church, and the boys and I would have our fun and we would play. And we discovered something. We didn't let Mama know this for a long time. But we had a deck on our house that came out from the second floor. So it was a whole floor above, you know. And so here's what I did. I got that trampoline and I moved it over by the deck. And I taught my boys how to time their jumps. And I said, now when you get this just right, I got up on the railing of the deck. And I said, okay, when I yell, I'm going to jump. And we're going to see how high we can launch you up in the air. And so sure enough, boy, we would time these jumps just right. And then I would jump and man, I would hit that trampoline just right. I could launch them up to roof height. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it was just awesome. I mean, it was so much fun. You say, well, wasn't that dangerous? Who cares? It was fun. We were having a ball until the day that we were doing it, and we weren't letting Mama know all about this stuff because it was none of Mama's business. But anyway, we were doing it one day. And somehow we got a little bit twisted, and Jeff was coming down as I was going up, and his teeth caught the top of my head. And so, you know, we both hit the ground, and we were both bleeding. He had a cut lip. I had a gash in my head, and you know how your head just bleeds when you cut your head and all that stuff. So we try to slip into the kitchen where I can get us cleaned up before Mama knows it. But Mama was cooking supper, so we got caught. And so anyway, she sat us both down, and she's cleaning my head, and she's cleaning Jeff's lip, and she looks at both of us and said, "You're both grounded." Jeff got the biggest smile on his face, and he looked at me, and he said, "Dad, you've been grounded too." But you know what? It was just fun. We just had a lot of fun. I got an email from my oldest son, Chris, just the other day, and it was such a blessing. He said, "Dad, I was just sitting here and I was reminiscing about all the good times that we had together, the hikes that we took, the games that we played, the places that we went, just the things that we did together as a family. There's so many stories, but it was lots of fun." Dad, let your hair down. Have some fun with your kids. Let them see you laugh. Let them see you enjoy life. Not by compromising the principles of what's important, but by doing what's fun and what's important. And let them see that you're a priority. I remember we were jumping on the trampoline one Tuesday night, and Janice was in the church and there for a women's ministry meeting, and we had a guy who was chairman of our finance committee. His name was Fred. You remember Fred? Fred was mean, and he did everything he could to try to exert control over the pastor and his family. So he knew that Tuesday night was my night with the boys, and he purposely called a finance committee meeting on Tuesday night to force me into a position of making a choice. So I made my choice. It was my boys. And so I was jumping on the trampoline at the house with my boys, and Fred goes tearing down the hall where he knows Janice is meeting, pulls her out of that meeting, says, "Where's Chuck? I called a finance committee meeting, and he's supposed to be here. Why ain't he here?" She said, "I'll tell you, he's jumping on the trampoline with his boys." "Well, you go back right now and go get him." She said, "I'm not going to do it. It's his night with the boys." He said, "Well, he's not answering the phone." She said, "Because he's on the trampoline jumping with his boys." I didn't go to the meeting, but I spent time with my boys because they were my priority, helping them understand what it meant to know God. We had a lot of good conversations on that trampoline and on those basketball courts and on those family trips that we did together. All right, number four. All right, Dad, what you must do to help your children catch what they need to be their best. Number one, spend time with them. Number two, teach your children. Number three, have fun with your children. Number four, encourage your children. Encourage your children. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 says, "And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works." I love the way the Message says it. It says, let's see how inventive we can be in encouraging love and helping out. I'm going to tell you something, Dad. You need to encourage your kids. I kiss my boys on the cheek, and don't you ever say anything about me for doing that. Because I love my boys. I hug my boys. I kiss my boys. There's nothing wrong with that. I high five them, give them a pat on the back. I remind them I'm still strong enough, I can pat them on the back low enough if they don't do good. But I let them know I love them because I want to share life with them. I go out of my way to show that affection to them, even when they've made mistakes. Even when they've acted in a disappointing way, I let them know that I'm not disappointed in them. I may be disappointed in what they've done, but I'm not disappointed in them. They're my sons, and I love them, and I care deeply about them. Let me tell you something, Dad. If your daughter does not find affection in your arms, she will find it somewhere. You need to hug her. Let her feel what it's like to have a godly man of integrity give her a hug and to hold her close. Let her know what it feels like to hear words of encouragement coming from you. Because remember, when your values are clear, your decisions are easy. Teach them that. Show them. Let me tell you, let me give you quickly three primary ways to encourage your children. Number one, give them attention. Listen to what they say. And that takes time. It takes eye contact. Have a family night every week. Eat supper together. Make it a rule. 6 o'clock, we're going to be at the table. We're going to all sit down. We're going to have supper together. We're going to decompress from the day. We're going to talk about the day. You know, a recent study showed that well-adjusted teens have more meals with their families than poorly adjusted teens. Spend time together. Second way is not only give them attention, but give them affection. Reach over. Pat them on the knee. Hold them. Give them a hug. Do whatever's necessary to maintain that physical contact. Take time to hug them, to connect with them in a physical way. Dad, I can't say this enough. Your daughters need your hugs. They need you. They need your love. They need to know what it's like to be loved by a godly man. Give them attention. Give them affection. Give them appreciation. Let them know when they've done a good job. And say thank you. Be polite. Treat them with kindness. Express gratitude a lot and encourage your kids by showing them God has given them value. That's the greatest source of encouragement. All right, number one, spend time with your children. Number two, teach your children. Number three, have fun with your children. Number four, encourage your children. And finally, number five, and this is a big one in our culture today, discipline your children. Discipline your children. I was talking to somebody the other day. You know, they have a phone number that rolls across the bottom of the television in California, that if you feel that you're an abused child, you call this 1-800 number and they'll send somebody out to intervene with your parents. If I were living in that culture and my boys picked up the phone and called that, I would tell them, first thing I would tell them is this: if you call the number, I'm going to give a real reason why you needed to call the number. It will significantly enhance what happens in your life. You know, one of the most important things you will ever do as a dad is to correct your children. But to do it right, you have to be able to correct your children without condemning them. Without condemning them. if you refuse to discipline your children, let me tell you, Dad, it proves that you don't love your children. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24 in the Message says, a refusal to correct is a refusal to love. Love your children by disciplining them. I'll tell you something else it means. It means that you're helping to destroy your children if you don't discipline them. Proverbs 19, 18 says, discipline your children while you still have the chance. Indulging them destroys them. Gosh, we live in a culture of indulged children. Everywhere you look. No wonder our children are making bad decisions. No wonder they're trying to set up households without even understanding what a household is. And you need to understand that there's a difference between punishment and discipline. Janice and I were headed back from Louisville this week. And we want to thank Trevor for introducing us to a restaurant up in Asheville called the Moose Cafe. Oh, my gosh. You ever going through there, stop and eat? Really, really good stuff. So anyway, we stopped there on our way down to grab a quick meal. And I'm watching Janice as she's sitting across the table from me. And her eyes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm thinking, what's going on? And she finally says, did you hear the conversations going on at the next table? And I'm oblivious. I don't pay attention to a lot of stuff like that. I said, no, I didn't hear a word. What was it? What were they saying? She said, well, it was a grandmother, and she was talking about her grandchild and how her grandchild goes to preschool and is potty trained, but he comes home and he wears the diaper because he doesn't want to use the potty like he does at preschool. And so his mama lets him be in a diaper at home because she's afraid she's going to damage his psyche. Do you really think I'm going to change that kid's diaper? If he can be potty trained at preschool, he can be potty trained at home as well. You know, it's amazing to me how we bend over backwards to indulge children in this culture. And in the process, what we're doing is we're damaging them. We're destroying them. Understand there's a difference between punishment and discipline. God disciplines his children. In fact, Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 6 says, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. But I'm going to tell you something. The Lord disciplines his children, but he's not punished his children. Because Jesus took all of his children's punishment on the cross. Romans chapter 8 verse 1 says, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. I don't have to worry about that. So what's the difference between punishment and discipline? Punishment is to inflict a penalty for what you've done wrong. Discipline is to promote growth. It's saying, I want to correct you. I want to train you. I want to help you be better. The focus is different. Punishment is focusing on the past. Discipline is focusing on the future. I want you to do better in the future. I want you to understand. The motivation is different. A lot of times punishment is done out of anger. I'm angry with you because you did something. Discipline is motivated out of love. I don't want you making this mistake. It will hurt you. And I don't want it to become a pattern in your life. Let me tell you, the Bible clearly teaches that spanking is appropriate. Listen, God uniquely designed little bodies so there's extra padding at certain places just for this. That's kind of the way he set it up. When you spank, you better make sure your motivation is right. Love it. Love them. Not in anger. Hug them. Tell them, because the result is different. If it's resulting in fear and guilt, then it's punishment. But if it's resulting in security, then it's discipline. Your child can feel secure because they know where the fences are. They know where the fences are. How can you know when you're punishing and when you're disciplining? I'm going to tell you how. Look in your child's eyes and ask yourself, are they afraid of me right now? Because if they are, it's punishment. It's not discipline. But if you explain to them that you love them, that you care about them, and that more than anything else, that you want to help correct them. The Bible says in 1 John 4:18, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment or punishment. You know, I think one of the reasons that kids grow up in Christian homes and reject the faith is because they were not disciplined in love. They were punished in anger. And outwardly, they may have conformed, but inwardly, they were full of fear and bitterness and resentment, and they couldn't wait to leave that oppressive environment and get somewhere else. So how do you discipline? Make sure that you discipline calmly. Don't do it to relieve your frustration. Don't scream at your kids. Don't nag your kids. Your kids don't like that any better than you do. Discipline them calmly. Discipline them quickly. Don't delay. And mom, for goodness sake, don't say, wait till your daddy gets home. That is so unfair. That is so wrong. Just take care of it and discipline them. You know, we want the children to look forward to our arrival when we come home, not dread it. And dads, don't leave all the discipline to your wife. Don't try to come across as if you're the buddy and you're the hero. No, you be the one that also exercises discipline. Discipline calmly, discipline quickly, discipline sparingly. Don't discipline kids for being kids. Let them be kids. They're going to break things. You broke things. I broke things. That happens. Discipline them not for being children, but discipline them when they're rebellious. Because what you're disciplining is an attitude of the heart. And that's a big difference. It should be absolutely proven. And let me say this. If you've got a toddler at home, just toddler-proof your house. And quit saying no 1,000 different times. You know, don't touch that, don't touch this, don't touch that, don't touch this, don't touch that. And if you're taking a long car trip, plan something for the kids to do. And every now and then pull off on a country road and let them just run around like a bunch of wild Indians out there somewhere. And let them enjoy themselves. And make it fun. Just have fun in the process. Let me tell you something, Dad. The child, yes, needs to know where the fences are, but they don't need Mickey Mouse rules. They need clear, reasonable boundaries. And, Dad, you're the key to bringing the best out in your kids. So spend time with them. Teach them. Have fun with them. Encourage them and discipline them. Dad, your children need you because you help them form their first picture of God. And we teach our children to pray, "Our Father who art in heaven." And here's what we're telling them. God's like Daddy. Everybody needs a father. And if yours wasn't like you needed, if you weren't blessed to have a dad like I am, then I want to say to you right now, Dad, you can still be the dad you need to be. Would you bow your heads with me, please? Heads bowed and eyes closed. You say, well, how do I start? How do I even begin to be the father I need to be? Where does it start for me? Let me tell you where it starts. It starts with a heart that's committed to Jesus Christ. It knows the Lord, seeks to serve Him, to follow Him. Dad, it starts with you making that commitment. And I know that I'm speaking to some single mothers here. And I'm speaking to some others here that would give anything to have a godly man helping you raise your children. Let me tell you, that's why the men's ministry of this church is going to exist. We're going to help you. We're going to hold up your arms. We're going to help interact with your children. We're going to be godly men that make a difference. This morning, if God's spoken to your heart and you know that you need to make a change in your life, I invite you right now, just pray this prayer with me. Pray it in your heart. Dear Jesus, I know that I need you in my life. And right now, I surrender control of my life to you. And I ask you to come into my heart. Thank you, Jesus. If you prayed that prayer with me, I'm going to ask you in just a minute to leave your seat and to come forward and just say, I prayed that prayer. That'll be enough. We'll help you take the steps that you need to take from there. If you're here this morning and God has spoken your heart and He's told you, this is the church that you need to belong to. This is the family that you need to be a part of. You've already felt like you're part of the family even. But you know you belong here. You know this is where God's calling you to be. Then I invite you to leave your seat, come forward, and just say, yes, I belong. I'm coming home. We'll welcome you with open arms, I promise you. Dads, I have a challenge for you. We're going to open the altar, the front of this church up as an altar. And I'm going to encourage you as the dad to be the spiritual leader of your family. To bring them here to the front and just pray for them. And pray with them that you will be the dad that God has called you to be.